Cassette number 5.
Side 2. A treatise on cosmic fire. Continuing section 1, division E, motion on the physical and astral planes, on page 210. When the rods of initiation are held in the hands of the initiator in his position of power and at the stated seasons, they act as transmitters of electric force from very high levels, so high indeed that the flaming diamond at certain of the final initiations, the 6th and 7th, transmits force via the logos from outside the system altogether. We need to remember that this major rod is the one used on this planet, but that within the system there are several such rods of power, and that they are to be found in three grades, if it may be so expressed. First, the rod of initiation used for the first two initiations and wielded by the great Lord, the Christ, the world teacher. It is magnetized by application of the flaming diamond, the magnetization being repeated when each new world teacher takes office. There is a wonderful ceremony performed at the time that a new world teacher takes up his work. During the ceremony, he receives his rod of power, the same rod as used since the foundation of our planetary hierarchy, and holds it forth to the Lord of the world, who touches it with his own mighty rod, causing a fresh recharging of its electric capacity. Page 211. This ceremony takes place at Shambhala. Footnote: Shambhala, the sacred island in the Gobi Desert, the center in Central Asia where the Lord of the world, the Ancient of Days, has his headquarters. HPB says it is a very mysterious locality on account of its future associations. From the Secret Doctrine, Volume 2, page 413. Footnote: The world teacher takes office cyclically. His cycles do not coincide with those of the Manu, as the Manu holds office for the entire root race. The world teacher gives out the keynote for the various religions and is the emanating source for periodical religious impulses. The duration of his cycles are not given out. The Buddha held office prior to the present world teacher, and upon his illumination, his place was taken by the Lord Maitreya, whom the Occidentals call the Christ. Return to text. Second, the rod of initiation known as the flaming diamond and used by Sanat Kumara, the one initiator, called in the Bible the Ancient of Days. This rod lies hidden in the east and holds the fire latent which irradiates the wisdom religion. This rod was brought by the Lord of the world when he took form and came to our planet 18 million years ago. Once in every world period, it is subjected to a similar process as that of the lesser rod, only this time it is recharged by the direct action of the Logos himself, the Logos of the solar system. The location of this rod is known only to the Lord of the world and to the Chohans of the rays, and, being the talisman of this evolution, the Chohan of the second ray is, under the Lord of the world, its main guardian, aided by the Deva Lord of the second plane. The Buddhas of activity are responsible for its custody, and under them the Chohan of the ray. It is produced only at stated times when specific work has to be done. It is used not only at the initiating of men, but at certain planetary functions of which nothing as yet has been given out. It has its place and function in certain ceremonies connected with the inner round and the triangle formed by the Earth, Mars, and Mercury. Page 212. But more about this is not at this time permissible. Footnote: The inner round is a mysterious cycle of which little can be told. It is not concerned with manifestation through the seven schemes or globes, but has to do with certain aspects of the subjective life or the soul. Return to text. Third, the rod of initiation wielded by the Logos of the solar system is called, among other things, the sevenfold flaming fire. It was confided to our Logos by the Lord of Sirius and sent to our system from that radiant sun. One of its purposes is for use in emergencies. This great talisman has never yet been employed in this particular manner, though twice it was nearly thus used, once in Atlantean days and once in the third year of the late war. This rod of power is used at the initiation of the seven heavenly men on cosmic levels. It is used also in the initiation of groups, a thing almost incomprehensible to us. It is applied to the centers of the seven heavenly men in the same general way as the lesser rods are applied to the human centers, and the effects are the same, only on a vaster scale. This, needless to say, is a vast and abstruse subject, and concerns not the sons of men. It is but touched upon, as an enumeration of the rods of initiation would be incomplete without some reference to it, and it serves to show the wondrous synthesis of the whole and the place of the system within an even greater scheme. In all things cosmic, perfect law and order are found, and the ramifications of the plan can be seen on all planes and all subplanes. This greatest rod is in the care of the first great group of karmic lords. It might be described as the rod which carries a voltage of pure phohatic force from cosmic levels. The two lesser rods carry differentiated phohatic force. This logoic rod of power is kept within the sun and is only recharged at the beginning of every 100 years of Brahma. The reason why the rods of power are here discussed is that they have definitely to do with the centers, which are force vortices in matter, and which, though channels for spiritual force or centers wherein the will to be finds expression, demonstrate as activity in matter. Page 213. They are the centers of existence, and just as one cannot, in manifestation, dissociate the two poles of spirit and matter, so one cannot, in initiation, apply the rod without bringing about definite effects between the two. The rods are charged with phohat, which is fire of matter plus electric fire, hence their effect. The mystery cannot be explained in greater detail, as the secrets of initiation are not transmissible. More has been here imparted on this matter than hitherto, though there are those who have heard these things. Page 214, Section 1, Division F, The Law of Economy. Roman numeral 1, Its Effect in Matter. 1, Dissociation of Atoms. 2, Distribution of Atoms. 3, Vibratory Rhythm. 4, Heterogeneity. 5, Inherent Rotary Activity. Roman numeral 2, its subsidiary laws. 1, the law of vibration. 2, the law of adaptation. 3, the law of repulsion. 4, the law of friction. Roman numeral 1, its effect in matter. This law is the law governing the matter aspect of manifestation, and is the law characterizing the work of the third logos and of the entities who are the embodiment of his will and the agents of his purposes. Each of the great cosmic entities who take form as the three logoi is distinguished by different methods of activity, which might be described thus. The third aspect, or Brahma aspect, of the activities of those entities who are his expression is characterized by that method in the distribution of matter which we call the law of economy. It is the law governing the scattering of the atoms of matter and their dissociation from one another. Wide distribution, vibratory rhythm, heterogeneity and quality, and their inherent rotary action. Page 215. This law of economy causes matter always to follow the line of least resistance, and is the basis of the separative action of atomic matter. It governs matter, the opposite pole of spirit. The second aspect, the building or Vishnu aspect, is governed by the law of attraction. The activities of the entities who embody this aspect are directed to the attracting of matter to spirit and the gradual approximation of the two poles. It results in cohesion, in the production of congeries of atoms in various formations, and this attraction is brought about by the attractive power of spirit itself. It shows itself in 1. Association, 2. Form building, 3. Adaptation of form to vibration, 4. Relative homogeneity of group unity. 5. Cyclic spiraling movement. The line of least resistance is not the law for this aspect. The attractive power of spirit in form building and in the adaptation of the form to the need is the secret of the pain and resistance in the world. Pain is only caused by resistance and is a necessary phase in the process of evolution. This law of attraction is the law governing the spirit, the opposite pole of matter. The first aspect, or the will to exist, is governed by the law of synthesis, and the activities of the cosmic entities who are its embodiments are governed by the law of enforced unity and of essential homogeneity. It is the law that eventually comes into play after spirit and matter are blending and adapting themselves each to each. It governs the eventual synthesis of self with self and finally with the all self, and also of essence with essence in contradistinction to the synthesis of matter and spirit. It demonstrates as 1. Abstraction, 2. Spiritual liberation, 3. Destruction of form through the withdrawal of spirit, the destroyer aspect, 4. Absolute homogeneity and absolute essential unity, 5. Progressive forward motion. Page 216. Thus can be seen the wonderful synthesis brought about by the evolutionary working of these 3 cosmic laws, each of them embodying the mode of work of certain cosmic entities or existences. The final 2 will be taken up in their right place. Now we will touch but briefly upon the law of matter, that of economy. This is the law that lies back of what has been mistakenly called the fall by religious writers, by which is defined in reality the involutionary process cosmically considered. It led to a 7-fold differentiation in the matter of the system, just as the law of attraction led to the 7-fold psychic differentiation of the sons of mind, and the law of synthesis results in the 7-fold perfection of the same Manasa Putras, so we have an interesting connection between the 7 planes, or the 7 grades of matter, the 7 heavenly men, the 7 divine Manasa Putras, or the 7 types of wisdom love, the 7 qualities of wisdom which are produced by the cosmic entities, the Kumaras, by the aid of knowledge through the medium of matter. This law of economy has several subsidiary laws which govern its effects on the different grades of matter. As said before, this is the law swept into action by the sounds as uttered by the Logos. The sacred word, or the uttered sound of the Creator, exists in different forms, and though in reality but one word, has several syllables. The syllables altogether form a solar phrase. Separated, they form certain words of power, producing different effects. Page 217. The great word that peals through 100 years of Brahma, or persists in reverberation throughout a solar system, is the sacred sound of Aum, A-U-M. In differentiation and as heard in time and space, each of those 3 mystic letters stands for the first letter of a subsidiary phrase consisting of various sounds. One letter with a sequence of 4 sounds makes up the vibration or note of Brahma, which is the intelligence aspect dominant in matter. Hence the mystery hidden in the pentagon, in the 5th principle of mind, and in the 5 planes of human evolution. Page 218. These 5 letters, when sounded forth on the right note, give the key to the true inwardness of matter and also to its control, this control being based on the right interpretation of the law of economy. Another phrase, this time of 7 letters, or a letter for each of the 7 heavenly men, embodies the sound or note of the Vishnu aspect, the 2nd aspect logoic, the form-building aspect. By its correct or partial sounding, by its complete or incomplete reverberation, are the forms built and adapted. The law of attraction finds expression in the manipulation of matter and its welding into form for the use of spirit. Then a 3rd word or phrase is added to the other 2, completing the entire word logoic and producing consummation. It is a word of 9 letters, making therefore the 21 sounds. 5 + 7 + 9 of this solar system. The final 9 sounds produce spiritual synthesis and the dissociation of the spirit from the form. We have a correspondence in the 9 initiations, each initiation marking a more perfect union of the self with the all-self and a further liberation from the trammels of matter. When the sense of hearing on all planes is perfected, which is brought about by the law of economy rightly understood, these 3 great words or phrases will be known. The knower will utter them in his own true key, thus blending his own sound with the entire volume of vibration and thereby achieving sudden realization of his essential identity with those who utter the words. As the sound of matter, or of Brahma, peals forth in his ears on all the planes, he will see all forms as illusion and will be freed, knowing himself as omnipresent. As the sound of Vishnu reverberates within himself, he knows himself as perfected wisdom and distinguishes the note of his being, or that of the heavenly man in whose body he finds place, from the group notes and knows himself as omniscient. Page 219. As the note of the first or Mahadeva aspect follows upon the other two, he realizes himself as pure spirit and on the consummation of the cord is merged in the self, or the source from which he came. Mind is not, matter is not, and naught is left but the self merged in the ocean of the self. At each stage of relative attainment, one of the laws comes into sway, first the law of matter, then the law of groups, to be succeeded by the law of spirit and of liberation. Roman numeral 2, the subsidiary laws. The subsidiary laws under the law of economy are four in number, dealing with the lower quaternary. 1. The law of vibration, dealing with the keynote or measure of the matter of each plane. By knowledge of this law, the material of any plane in its seven divisions can be controlled. 2. The law of adaptation is the law governing the rotary movement of any atom on every plane and subplane. 3. The law of repulsion governs that relationship between atoms which results in their non-attachment and in their complete freedom from each other. It also keeps them rotating at fixed points from the globe or sphere of opposite polarity. 4. The law of friction governs the heat aspect of any atom, the radiation of an atom, and the effect of that radiation on any other atom. Every atom of matter can be studied in four aspects and is governed by one or other or all of the four above mentioned laws. A. An atom vibrates to a certain measure. B. It rotates at a certain speed. C. It acts and reacts upon its environing atoms. D. It adds its quota to the general heat of the atomic system, whatever that may be. Page 220. These general rules relating to atomic bodies can be extended not only to the atoms of the physical plane, but to all spheroidal bodies within the system, and including the system also, regarding it as a cosmic atom. The tiny atom of the physical plane, a plane itself, a planet, and a solar system, all evolve under these rules, and all are governed by the law of economy in one of its four aspects. It might be added in closing that this law is one that initiates have to master before they can achieve liberation. They have to learn to manipulate matter and to work with energy or force in matter under this law. They have to utilize matter and energy in order to achieve the liberation of spirit and to bring to fruition the purposes of the Logos in the evolutionary process. Page 221. Section 2. Solar Fire, the Fire of Mind. Introductory Questions. Division A, Manas or Mind and its Nature. Division B, Manas as a Cosmic, Systemic and Human Factor. Division C, the Egoic Ray and Solar Fire. Division D, Thought Elementals and Fire Elementals. Division E, Motion on the Plane of Mind. Division F, the Law of Attraction. Page 222 is blank. Page 223. Section 2. Introductory Questions. 1. What is the relation of the sun to the sun? 2. What is evolution and how does it proceed? 3. Why is the solar system evolving along the lines of duality? 4. What is consciousness and what is its place in the scheme? 5. Is there a direct analogy between a system, a planet, man, and an atom? 6. What is the mind aspect? Who are the Manasaputras? 7. Why is the progress of evolution cyclic? 8. Why is knowledge both exoteric and esoteric? 9. What is the relation between A, the 10 schemes, B, the 7 sacred planets, C, the 7 chains in a scheme, D, the 7 globes in a chain, E, the 7 rounds of a chain, F, the 7 root races and sub-races. Before taking up the subject of the fire of mind under the schedule already outlined, it might be of profit if certain facts are here pointed out and one or two points clarified. The subject we are undertaking to elucidate is one of profound mystery and is the basis of all that is now seen and known, both objectively and subjectively. We have somewhat studied that pole of manifestation called matter. The subject we are now entering upon concerns several things which might be considered in general terms as consciousness and in specified terms as including the following subjects, hence its fundamental importance. Page 224. A. The science of objectivity. B. The manifestation of the sun through the sun and its attendant spheres, or the solar system in its entirety. C. The evolutionary development of consciousness in time and space, therefore the evolution of spirit and matter. If the above three fundamentals are studied, it will be noted that they are very comprehensive, and therefore, from the immensity of the theme, it will not be possible to do more than attempt to bring a general clarity of conception as to the broad outline of the process and as to the gradual development of consciousness. For the sake of an intelligent following of this matter, it might be wise first to lay down a number of propositions which, even if already known and appreciated, will serve students as the scaffolding on which to erect the intended structure of knowledge. If a student of the wisdom can grasp the nature of the general theme, he can then more easily and accurately fit the detailed information into its appropriate niche. Perhaps the best plan would be to formulate certain questions and then proceed to answer them, the answers to embody therefore the propositions that will be laid down. These questions arise naturally to the student of the secret doctrine when he has reached the point where the big plan is becoming visible to him, but the pile of detailed material to be built in remains as yet inchoate. The questions we might ask and study are the following. 1. What is the relationship of the sun to the sun? 2. What is evolution and how does it proceed? 3. Why is this solar system evolving along the lines of duality? 4. What is consciousness and what is its place in the present scheme of things? Page 225. 5. Is there a direct analogy between the development of the following factors, a solar system, a planet, a man, and an atom? 6. What is the mind aspect, and why is the manasic or mental principle of such importance? Who are the manasaputras, or the sons of mind? 7. Why is the progress of evolution cyclic? 8. Why, as yet, do we consider certain knowledge as esoteric and other aspects of knowledge as exoteric? 9. What is the relationship between A. the 10 planetary schemes, B. the 7 sacred planets, C. the 7 globes in a chain, D. the 7 rounds in a globe, E. the 7 root races and the sub-races? When we have endeavored to answer in brief and concise fashion these 9 questions, and have grasped through their replies something of the purpose lying behind the evolution of the consciousness of the sun, with all that is included in that expression, we shall be in a position to go more intelligently into a consideration of the plan, and to grasp more accurately the immediate stage ahead to be attained, working from our present standpoint as a basis. We must ever remember that a curious interest and a far-seeing grasp of the plan of the Logos is of no importance to a man unless he correlates the present with that which he believes to lie in the future, unless he ascertains the point achieved and realizes wherein consists the work immediately to be undertaken in this gradual process of attaining full consciousness. Roman numeral 1. What is the relationship of the sun, S-O-N, to the sun, S-U-N? This question brings us primarily to a consideration as to who is the sun and what is his function. Two factors are universally recognized in all systems that merit the name of philosophy. They are the two factors of spirit and matter, of Purusha and Prakriti. Page 226 is a chart and is deleted. Page 227. There is at times a tendency to confound such terms as life and form, consciousness and the vehicle of consciousness, with the terms spirit and matter. They are related, but clarity of view would be facilitated if it were realized that prior to manifestation, or to the birth of a solar system, it is more correct to utilize the words spirit and matter. When these two are interrelated during manifestation, and after the cessation of the pralaic interval or interlude between two systems, then the terms life and form, consciousness and its vehicles, are more correct. For during the period of abstraction, consciousness is not, form is not, and life, demonstrating as an actual principle, is not. There is spirit substance, but in a state of quiescence, of utter neutrality, of negativity, and of passivity. In manifestation, the two are approximated. They interact upon each other. Activity supersedes quiescence. Positivity replaces negativity. Movement is seen in place of passivity. And the two primordial factors are no longer neutral to each other, but attract and repulse, interact and utilize. Then and only then can we have form animated by life and consciousness demonstrated through appropriate vehicles. How can this be expressed? In terms of fire, when the two electric poles are brought into definite relationship, we have demonstrated, along the line of occult sight and of occult feeling, both heat and light. This relationship is brought about and perfected during the evolutionary process. This heat and light are produced by the union of the two poles, or by the occult marriage of male and female, of spirit, father, and matter, mother. In terms of the physical, this union produces the objective solar system, the sun of the father and the mother. In terms of the subjective, it produces the sun as the sum total of the qualities of light and heat. Page 228. In terms of fire, by the union or at-one-ment of electric fire spirit and fire by friction, energized matter, solar fire is produced. This solar fire will be distinguished above all else by its evolutionary development and by the gradual intensification of the heat to be felt and of the light to be seen. For a clearer comprehension of this abstract matter, we might consider the microcosm, or man, evolving in the three worlds. Man is the product of the approximation, at present imperfect, of the two poles of spirit, the father in heaven, and of matter, the mother. The result of this union is an individualized son of God, or unit of the divine self, an exact replica in miniature on the lowest plane of the great son of God, the all-self, who is in himself the totality of all the miniature sons of all the individualized selves and of each and every unit. The microcosm, expressed in other terms or from the subjective point of view, is a miniature sun distinguished by the qualities of heat and light. At present, that light is under the bushel, or deeply hidden by a veil of matter. But in due process of evolution, it will shine forth to such an extent that the veils will be lost from sight in a blaze of exceeding glory. At present, the microcosmic heat is of small degree, or the magnetic radiation between the microcosmic units is but little felt, in the occult significance of the term, but as time proceeds, the emanations of heat, due to intensification of the inner flame, coupled with the assimilated radiation of other units, will increase and become of such proportions that the interaction between the individualized cells will result in the merging to perfection of the flame within each one and a blending of the heat. This will proceed until there is one flame with countless sparks within it, until the heat is general and balanced. When this is the case, and each son of God is a perfected son, characterized by perfectly expressed light and heat, then the entire solar system, the greater son of God, will be the perfected sun. Page 229. The system will then be characterized by a blaze of refulgent glory and by a radiation that will link it up with its cosmic center and thus effect the liberation of the sun and his return to the far distant source from whence the primal impulse originated. Therefore, bear in mind, first, that the sun is the radiant result of the union of spirit and matter and may be considered as the totality of the solar system, the sun and the seven sacred planets. Second, that the sun manifests through his qualities of light and heat, as does the solar sun.
Third, that the sun is the product of the electrical union of fire by friction and electric fire, and is himself solar fire, or the manifestation of the other two, hence that which is seen and that which is felt. Finally, that the sun, therefore, is the middle manifestation, and is produced by that which is above and that which is below, in the occult sense. Therefore, the sun on his own plane, the cosmic mental plane, is the egoic body of the logos in the same sense as the egoic body of the microcosm is the product of the union of the monad, or spirit, and matter. Just as the body egoic of man, that which is called the causal body, is only in process of formation and is not yet perfected, so we may predicate the same of the solar system, as it expresses the life of God. It is in process of perfecting. The sun, manifesting through the sun and its sphere of influence, is yet in a state of gradual development, and not until each cell within his body is fully alive and vibrating to a uniform measure will he be full grown and perfected. Not until his radiation and his display of light is perfectly seen and felt will his place among the heavenly constellations, the Son of God in a cosmic sense, be fully achieved. Page 230. Not until each cell in his body is a sphere of radiant glory, a blaze of fire and light, and a source of magnetic radiation or heat, occultly expressed, will the sun in the heavens shine forth. From the cosmic point of view, as we know, our sun is but of the fourth order and on the lowest cosmic plane. When the sun has, through the sun, attained full expression, that is, perfected his display of light and heat, then he will shine forth upon another plane, that of the cosmic mental. We have the analogy in the microcosm, or man. When a man's light fully shines forth, when his magnetic radiation has reached the stage of vivid interaction or group activity, then he has attained full self-expression and has included within his sphere of influence and control the mental plane. He is then considered a master. He also is of the fourth order. He is the quaternary. The etheric plane is the center of his life in the physical sense, just as we are told that the sun and the planets esoterically are considered as existing in etheric matter. As above, so below, is the occult law. Therefore, the relationship of the Son of the Father and of the Mother is to the Son the same as man's relationship to the vehicle through which he functions. It is his mode of enterprise, his vehicle of expression. It is the form which his life animates for the specific purpose of A. gaining experience, B. making contact, C. developing full self-knowledge, D. achieving full mastery or control, E. attaining manhood cosmically. The cosmic Christ must measure up to the stature of a full-grown man, as it is expressed in the Christian Bible. F. expanding his consciousness. Page 231. All these stages have to be achieved on cosmic levels in exactly the same sense as the microcosm on systemic levels likewise strives for similar ideals. Roman numeral 2. What is evolution, and how does it proceed? 1. Life cycles. I do not propose to deal here with the evolutionary process in any other way than briefly to indicate that the whole method of evolution is simply that of adjusting the matter aspect to the spirit aspect, so that the former proves entirely adequate as a body of expression for the latter. The life cycle of the sun is 100 years of Brahma, in the same sense as man has a life cycle consisting of a certain number of years, dependent upon his karma. During the life cycle of a man, he expresses what is in him at his particular stage, and gradually develops from the stage of the antenatal period, wherein the self overshadows the matter aspect, until the period wherein that higher self takes full possession of the prepared form. This stage varies with every individual. From that time on, fuller self-consciousness is sought, and the man, if proceeding normally, expresses himself through the form ever more adequately. Each life of lesser cycle in the great cycle of the ego or self sees that expression more complete, brings the form more under control, and develops a conscious realization of the self until there comes a culminating cycle of lives in which the self within rapidly dominates and takes full authority. The form becomes wholly adequate. The fusion of the two poles of spirit and matter is fully brought about, and the light, fire, and heat, radiation, is seen and felt systemically. Then the form is either consciously utilized for specific ends or is vacated and the man is liberated. Electric fire and fire by friction are fused, and the consequent solar fire blazes forth in radiant glory. Extend this idea from man, an individualized unit of consciousness, to the great heavenly men, in one of whose bodies a man forms a cell. Page 232. The body of expression of each heavenly man is one of the sacred planets, and they aim at the same goal as man, the attainment on their own levels of full expression and the development of their vehicles of consciousness to a point where the spirit may blaze forth as light divine and as heat. This heat radiates consciously and with intense magnetic attraction between all the seven systemic groups or planetary schemes. Their magnetic field of action will include the planetary radius of one and all. Carry this thought still further to include the sun and the entire solar system which he animates. His attempt is to find full expression therein so that eventually and consciously his light may be seen and his heat or magnetic radiation may be felt beyond his immediate sphere of influence, the logoic ring pass not. Both the light of the sun and the heat of the sun must be felt by the opposite cosmic pole, that constellation which is our system's magnetic opposite. 2. The objective of the units of consciousness. Thus, the thought of union and of fusion underlies the entire scheme of evolution. Man, the heavenly men, and the cosmic man, the son of the father and the mother, have to A. radiate occult heat beyond their own individualized ring pass not. B. occultly blaze forth and demonstrate light or fiery objectivity. C. expand so as to include that which lies beyond their own immediate spheres. D. fuse and blend the two fires so as to produce perfectly the central fire, solar fire. E. blend spirit and matter so that a body is produced that will adequately express spirit. F. merge the essence within the form, which is occultly qualified during evolution, with the essence in all forms, humanly, in a planetary sense, and cosmically. G. attain human, systemic, and cosmic manhood. Page 233. H. achieve mastery on three planes of the solar system, humanly speaking. I. achieve mastery on five planes of the solar system when speaking of a heavenly man. J. achieve mastery on three cosmic planes when speaking of the cosmic Christ, the Son, or the Logos manifesting objectively. 3. The manifesting units of consciousness. Footnote. Matter, it must be remembered, is that totality of existence in the cosmos which falls within any of the planes of possible perception. These existences might be enumerated as follows. 1. The seven heavenly men. In their totality, they make up the body of the grand man of the heavens, the Logos. Other names for these beings: A. the seven planetary Logoi, or spirits. B. the Prajapatis. C. the seven lords of the rays. D. the Dihan Chohans. E. the seven spirits before the throne. F. the seven archangels. G. the seven Logoi. H. the seven builders. They are the informing entities of the divine ray, the ray of the second Logos, in much the same sense as Fohat and his seven brothers are the totality of the primordial ray. A. Matter is fecundated by the primordial ray of intelligence. This is the anima mundi, the soul of the world. B. The primordial ray is the vehicle for the divine ray of love and wisdom. The merging of these two is the aim of evolution. C. The divine ray is sevenfold. It brings in seven entities. D. These seven are: 1. The Logos of will or power. 2. The Logos of love and wisdom. 3. The Logos of activity. 4. The Logos of harmony. 5. The Logos of concrete science. 6. The Logos of devotion or abstract idealism. 7. The Logos of ceremonial law or order. true. Men, the monad, the units of consciousness, they in their totality make up the bodies of the seven heavenly men. Each monad is found upon one of the seven rays. 3. Devas. Such devas are, for instance, A. the deva lord of a plane, the sphere of his body is the entire plane. B. groups of building devas. 4. Entities involved in the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms. A. the life of the third logos, the atom of matter. B. the life of the second logos, groups of atoms built into forms, plant, animal. C. the life of the first logos, the forms indwelt by higher spirit. 5. The spirit of a planet. He is the sum total of the many involutionary lives upon a planet. 6. The atom. These footnotes were taken from volumes 1 and 2 of The Secret Doctrine by H.P. Blavatsky. Return to text. If these stated aims are carefully considered, it will be seen how each has its place within the plan, and how evolution is but a term used to express the gradual development in time and space of the inherent capacity of a human being, of a heavenly man, and of the grand man of the heavens. Page 234. The place and position of one and all to each other must be borne in mind, for no one can develop without the other. What, therefore, have we? A. The sun, the grand man of the heavens. He manifests through the sun and the seven sacred planets, each of whom embodies one of his seven principles, just as he, in his totality, embodies one of the principles of a greater cosmic entity. B. A heavenly man. He manifests through a planet and embodies one of the principles of the sun, the logos. He himself is likewise developing through seven principles, which are the source of his essential unity with all other heavenly men. Cosmically considered, the sun is developing the principle of a greater cosmic being, that principle which we call love-wisdom. That is the fundamental characteristic he has to develop during his life cycle. Each heavenly man, therefore, embodies predominantly a subsidiary principle of the fundamental one. In like manner, he himself has six subsidiary principles, as has the sun. C. A human being, man. He manifests on the physical plane through form and has also seven principles. In each life cycle, he works at their development. Page 235. He, likewise, has his primary coloring, dependent upon the fundamental principle embodied by the heavenly man, who is his originating source. Thus, we have the Logos, Father Spirit, Mother Matter, producing the sun or the grand man of the heavens, the conscious logoic ego, evolving through the sun and the seven sacred planets, each embodying a cosmic principle in six differentiations by method of A. expansion, vibratory stimulation, magnetic interaction, or the law of attraction and repulsion. B. cyclic progress, rotary repetition, coupled to spiraling ascension, and developing A. the quality of love wisdom through the utilization of form by the means of active intelligence. B. full self-consciousness. C. a perfected solar system, or the form adequate to the needs of the indwelling spirit. Here, a similar tabulation may be worked out to demonstrate the similarity of the process in the case of a heavenly man and a human being. If we ask why 10 schemes and, in effect, 10 planets, 7 sacred and 3 concealed, it is because the 7 sacred planets are eventually merged into the 3, and finally the 3 are blended into the 1. Page 236. This can be traced along the line of analogy as we consider the 7 rays. These 7 rays, which in manifestation are diverse, are eventually synthesized. The minor 4 are blended, we are told, into the 3rd major ray, and the 3 major rays are finally merged into the 1 synthetic ray, the love wisdom ray, the dragon of wisdom, the occult serpent swallowing its tail. This has been pointed out by H.P.B. We have therefore the 3 crowning rays, but 7 seen during the evolutionary process. End of side 2, cassette number 5, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 236. Continued on side 1 of cassette number 6. Cassette number 5, side 1, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. Continuing Section 1, Division E, Motion on the Physical and Astral Planes, page 190. Let us now proceed to take up each of these senses in detail. A. Hearing. This, very appropriately, is the first sense to be manifested. The first aspect of manifestation is that of sound, and necessarily, therefore, we would expect sound to be the first thing noticed by man on the physical plane, the plane of densest manifestation, and of the most marked effects of sound, regarding it as a creating factor. Preeminently, the physical plane is the plane of hearing, and hence the sense ascribed to the lowest plane of evolution and of each of the five planes. On this seventh or lowest plane, man has to come to full cognizance of the effect of the sacred word as it is in process of sounding forth. As it reverberates throughout the system, it drives matter into its appointed place, and on the physical plane finds its point of deepest materiality and of most concrete demonstration. The key for man to discover and turn concerns itself with the revealing of the mystery of A. his own sound, B. his brother's sound, C. his group sound, D. the sound of that one of the heavenly men with whom he is connected, E. the sound of the Logos, or the sound of nature, of the solar system, of the grand man of the heavens. Therefore, we note that on the physical plane, a man has to find his own note, finding it in spite of the density of the form. A. on the physical plane, he finds his own note. B. on the astral plane, he finds his brother's note. Through identity of emotion, he comes to the recognition of his brother's identity. Page 191. C. on the mental plane, he begins to find his group note. D. on the Buddhic plane, or the plane of wisdom, he begins to find the note of his planetary logos. E. on the atmic or spiritual plane, the note logoic begins to sound within his consciousness. I am differentiating thus for the sake of clarity. In evolution itself, due to the parallelism of nature, the distinctions are not so sharply made, and a man's ray, point of development, the work earlier accomplished, his temporary limitations and other causes create a seeming confusion. But in the great scheme, as seen from above downwards, the work proceeds as described. Hearing on the astral plane is commonly called clairaudience and means the ability to hear the sounds of the astral plane. It is a faculty that demonstrates throughout the entire astral body, and a man hears all over his vehicle, and not only through the specialized organs, the ears, the product of physical plane action and reaction. This would necessarily be so, owing to the fluidic nature of the astral body. Man, on the physical plane, hears at the same time a certain range of sounds, and only a small and particular gamut of vibrations impinges upon his ears. There are many of the lesser sounds of nature which entirely escape him, while the major group sounds are not differentiated at all. As evolution proceeds and the inner sense of hearing becomes acute, these other physical plane sounds will likewise swing into his ken, and he will be acutely conscious of all sounds on the astral and the physical plane, a thing which, if possible now, would result in the shattering of the body. If the note of nature, for instance, were to strike but once upon the ear of a man, a note made up of the totality of vibrations produced by all dense material forms, his physical body would be completely disrupted. Page 192. He is not ready yet for such a happening. The inner ear is not duly prepared. Only when the threefold hearing is consummated will completed hearing on the physical plane be likewise permitted. Hearing on the mental plane is simply an extension of the faculty of differentiating sound. The hearing dealt with on all these planes is the hearing that has to do with the form, that concerns the vibration of matter, and that is occupied with the not-self. It has not to do with the psyche, or the telepathic communication that proceeds from mind to mind, but with the sound of the form, or that power whereby one separated unit of consciousness is aware of another unit who is not himself. Bear this carefully in mind. When the extension of hearing becomes such that it concerns the psyche, then we call it telepathy, or that wordless communication that is the synthesis of hearing on all the three lower planes, and which is known by the ego in the causal body on the formless levels of the mental plane. On the buddhic plane, hearing, now of the synthetic quality called telepathy, demonstrates as complete comprehension, for it has involved two things. One, a knowledge and recognition of individual sound. Two, a similar knowledge of group sound and their complete unification. This causes the most perfect comprehension and is the secret of the Master's power. On the atmic plane, this perfected hearing is seen as beatitude. Sound, the basis of existence. Sound, the method of being. Sound, the final unifier. Sound, therefore, realized as the raison d'être, as the method of evolution, and therefore as beatitude. Footnote. The chief agency by which nature's wheel is moved in a phenomenal direction is sound. Sound is the first aspect of the manifested pentagon, since it is a property of ether called akas, and as I already said, Vedic recitation is the highest yagman, containing in itself all minor yagnams and tending to preserve the manifested pentagon in the proper order. In the opinion of our old philosophers, sound or speech is next to thought, the highest karmic agent used by man. Of the various karmic agencies wielded by man in the way of molding himself and surroundings, sound or speech is the most important, for to speak is to work in ether, which of course rules the lower quaternary of elements, air, fire, water, and earth. Human sound or language contains therefore all the elements required to move the different classes of devas, and those elements are of course the vowels and the consonants. The details of the philosophy of sound in its relation to the devas who preside over the subtle world belong to the domain of true mantra sastra, which of course is in the hands of the knowers. From Some Thoughts on the Gita, page 72. Return to text. Page 193. B. Touch. In taking up the subject of the second sense, that of touch, we must note that this sense is preeminently the sense of very great importance in this, the second solar system, a system of astral Buddhic consciousness. Footnote: astral Buddhic consciousness is the term applied to the basic consciousness in our solar system. It is characterized by emotion, by feeling, sensation, which have eventually to be transmuted into intuition, spiritual perception, and unity. Return to text. Each of these senses, after having reached a certain point, begins to synthesize with the others in such a way that it is almost impossible to know where one begins and the other ends. Touch is that innate recognition of contact through the exercise of manas, or mind, in a threefold manner, as recognition, as memory, as anticipation. Each of the five senses, when coupled with manas, develops within the subject a concept embodying the past, the present, and the future. Therefore, when a man is very highly evolved, has transcended time, as known in the three worlds, and can therefore look at the three lower planes from the standpoint of the eternal now, he has superseded the senses by full active consciousness. He knows, and needs not the senses to guide him any longer to the knowledge. But in time and in the three worlds, each sense on each plane is employed to convey to the thinker some aspect of the not-self, and, by the aid of mind, the thinker can then adjust his relationship thereto. Page 194. Hearing gives him an idea of relative direction and enables a man to fix his place in the scheme and to locate himself. Touch gives him an idea of relative quantity and enables him to fix his relative value as regards other bodies extraneous to himself. Sight gives him an idea of proportion and enables him to adjust his movements to the movements of others. Taste gives him an idea of value and enables him to fix upon that which to him appears best. Smell gives him an idea of innate quality and enables him to find that which appeals to him as of the same quality or essence as himself. In all these definitions, it is necessary to bear in mind that the whole object of the senses is to reveal the not-self, and to enable the self, therefore, to differentiate between the real and the unreal. Footnote. Sensations aroused by sense objects are experienced by means of the outer instruments of the lord of the body or senses, indriya. which are the pathways through which the jiva receives worldly experience. These are 10 in number and are of two classes. A. The 5 organs of sensation, Yanendriya. 1. The ear, hearing. 2. Skin, feeling by touch. 3. Eye, sight. 4. Tongue, taste. 5. Nose, smell. B. The 5 organs of action, Karmendriya. 1. Mouth, speaking. 2. Hands, grasping. 3. Legs, walking. 4. Anus, excretion. 5. Genitals, procreation. The organs of sensation are the reactive response which the self makes to sensation. The organs of action are those through which effect is given to the jiva's desires. The indriya, or sense, is not the physical organ, but the faculty of mind operating through that organ as its instrument. The outward sense organs are the usual means whereby, on the physical plane, the functions of hearing and so forth are accomplished. But as they are mere instruments and their power is derived from the mind, a yogi may accomplish by the mind only all that may be done by means of these physical organs without the use of the latter. The 3 functions of attention, selection, and synthesizing, the discrete manifold of the senses, are those belonging to that aspect of the mental body, the internal agent, called manas. Just as manas is necessary to the senses, the latter are necessary for manas. Manas is thus the leading indriya of which the senses are powers. From Serpent Power by Arthur Avalon. Return to text. Page 195. In the evolution of the senses, hearing is the first vague something which calls the attention of the apparently blind self, A, to another vibration, B, to something originating outside of itself, C, to the concept of externality. When sound is first contacted, the consciousness for the first time becomes aware of that which is without. But all that is grasped by the dormant consciousness, by means of this one sense of hearing, is the fact of something extraneous to itself, and of the direction in which that something lies. This apprehension, in course of time, calls into being another sense, that of touch. The law of attraction works. The consciousness moves slowly outwards towards that which is heard, and when contact is made with the not-self, it is called touch. This touch conveys other ideas to the groping consciousness, ideas of size, of external texture, and of surface differences. The concept of the thinker is thus slowly enlarged. He can hear and feel, but as yet knows not enough to correlate nor name. When he succeeds in naming, he has made a big stride forward. We might note here, therefore, that the earliest cosmic symbols are applicable to the senses as well as elsewhere. The point in the center, consciousness and the not-self at a stage where sound alone is descriptive. The divided circle, consciousness aware of the not-self through a dual recognition. Page 196. Sight follows on this, the third sense, and the one definitely marking the correlation of ideas or the relation between. It parallels the coming of mind, both in time and function. We have hearing, touch or feeling, and then sight. In connection with the correspondence, it is to be noted that sight came in with the third root race in this round, and that the third race saw also the coming in of mind. The self and the not-self were immediately correlated and coordinated. Their close partnership became an accomplished fact, and evolution hastened forward with renewed impetus. These 3 major senses, if I might so describe them, are very definitely allied, each with one of the 3 logoi. Hearing, the recognition of the fourfold word, the activity of matter, the third logos. Touch, the recognition of the sevenfold form builder, the gathering together of forms, their approximation and interrelation, the second logos. The law of attraction between the self and the not-self begins to work. Sight, the recognition of totality, the synthesis of all, the realization of the one in many, the first logos. The law of synthesis operating between all forms which the self occupies, and the recognition of the essential unity of all manifestation by the means of sight. As regards taste and smell, we might call them minor senses, for they are closely allied to the important sense of touch. They are practically subsidiary to that sense. This second sense and its connection with this second solar system should be carefully pondered upon. It is predominantly the sense most closely connected with the second logos. This conveys a hint of much value if duly considered. It is of value to study the extensions of physical plane touch on other planes and to see whither we are led. It is the faculty which enables us to arrive at the essence by due recognition of the veiling sheath. Page 197. It enables the thinker who fully utilizes it to put himself en rapport with the essence of all selves at all stages, and thereby to aid in the due evolution of the sheath and actively to serve. A lord of compassion is one who, by means of touch, feels with, fully comprehends, and realizes the manner in which to heal and correct the inadequacies of the not-self, and thus actively to serve the plan of evolution. We should study likewise in this connection the value of touch as demonstrated by the healers of the race, those on the Bodhisattva line, and the effect of the law of attraction and repulsion as thus manipulated by them. Footnote: the line of the Bodhisattva is that of love wisdom and of the detailed science of the soul. It is the teaching line and the path upon which all must eventually pass. Return to text. Students of etymology will have noted that the origin of the word touch is somewhat obscure, but probably means to draw with quick motion. Herein lies the whole secret of this objective solar system, and herein will be demonstrated the quickening of vibration by means of touch. Inertia, mobility, rhythm are the qualities manifested by the not-self. Rhythm, balance, and stable vibration are achieved by means of this very faculty of touch or feeling. Let me illustrate briefly so as to make the problem somewhat clearer. What results in meditation? By dint of strenuous effort and due attention to rules laid down, the aspirant succeeds in touching matter of a quality rarer than is his usual custom. He contacts his causal body. In time, he contacts the matter of the buddhic plane. By means of this touch, his own vibration is temporarily and briefly quickened. Fundamentally, we are brought back to the subject that we deal with in this treatise. The latent fire of matter attracts to itself that fire latent in other forms. They touch, and recognition and awareness ensues. The fire of manas burns continuously and is fed by that which is attracted and repulsed. When the two blend, the stimulation is greatly increased and the ability to touch intensified. Page 198. The law of attraction persists in its work until another fire is attracted and touched, and the threefold merging is completed. Forget not in this connection the mystery of the rod of initiation. Footnote: the initiations spoken of in this treatise are the major initiations which bring about those expansions of consciousness which lead to liberation. These are taken in the causal body, and from thence reflected into the physical. The initiate never proclaims his initiation. Return to text. Later, when we consider the subject of the centers and initiation, it must be remembered that we are definitely studying one aspect of this mysterious faculty of touch, the faculty of the second logos, wielding the law of attraction. Let us now finish what may be imparted on the remaining three senses, sight, taste, smell, and then briefly sum up their relationship to the centers and their mutual action and interaction. That will then leave two more points to be dealt with in this first division of the treatise on cosmic fire and a summing up. We shall then be in a position to take up that portion of the treatise that deals with the fire of manas and with the development of the manasaputras, both in their totality and likewise individually. Footnote: manasaputras, these are the sons of mind, the individual principle in man, the ego, the solar angel, in his own body, on the abstract levels of the mental plane. Return to text. This topic is of the most imperative importance, as it deals entirely with man, the ego, the thinker, and shows the cosmic blending of the fires of matter and of mind. and their utilization by the indwelling flame. C. Sight. This sense, as said before, is the paramount correlating sense of the solar system. Under the law of economy, man hears. Sound permeates matter and is the basis of its subsequent heterogeneity. Under the law of attraction, man touches and makes contact with that which is brought to his attention through sound waves of activity. Page 199. This leads to a condition of mutual repulsion and attraction between the one who apprehends and that which is apprehended. Having apprehended and then contacted, his eyes are opened and he recognizes his place in the whole order under the law of synthesis. Hearing, unity. Touch, duality. Sight, triplicity. In these three senses, the present is summed up for us. The work of evolution is to recognize, utilize, coordinate, and dominate the whole till the self, by means of these three, becomes actively aware of every form, of every vibration, and of every pulsation of the not-self. Then, through the arranging power of mind, the objective of the self will be to find the truth, or that center in the circle of manifestation, which is, for the self, the center of equilibrium, and the one point where the coordination is perfected. Then the self can dissociate itself from every veil, every contact, and every sense. This leads in every manifestation to three types of separation. Involution, the separation of matter or the one becoming the many. The senses are developed and the apparatus is perfected by the self for the utilization of matter. This is under the law of economy. Evolution, up to the time of the probationary path. The merging of spirit and matter and the utilization of the senses in a progressing identification of the self with all forms from the lowest to those relatively refined. This is under the law of attraction. Evolution on the path. Again, the separation of spirit from matter, its identification with the one, and the ultimate rejection of form. The senses then are synthesized into acquired faculty. And the self has no further use for the not-self. It blends with the all-self. This is under the law of synthesis. Page 200. If this is borne in mind, it leads to a realization that the separation of the spirit from the material vehicle involves two aspects of the one great all. Herein is seen the work of the creator, the preserver, and the destroyer. In the final perfection of this third sense of sight, the term used is the wholly inadequate one of realization. Let the student study carefully the lowest and highest demonstration of the senses as laid down in the tabulation earlier imparted, and note the occult significance of the expressions used in the summation. Hearing, beatitude. This is realized through the not-self. Touch, service. The summation of the work of the self for the not-self. Sight, realization, recognition of the triplicity needed in manifestation, or the reflex action of the self and the not-self. Taste, perfection, evolution completed through the utilization of the not-self and its realized adequacy. Smell, perfected knowledge, the principle of manas in its discriminating activity, perfecting the interrelation between the self and the not-self. This all concerns the perfected, realized personality. In all these perfections is seen the awareness of the self and the graded process of identification, utilization, manipulation, and final rejection of the not-self by that self who is now consciously aware. He hears the note of nature and that of his monad. He recognizes their identity, utilizes their vibration, and passes rapidly through the three stages of creator, preserver, and destroyer. Page 201. He touches or feels the vibration of the form or not-self in all its various grades, recognizes his identity in time and space, and for purposes of existence or being, and by means of the three laws of economy, attraction, and synthesis, utilizes, blends, and eventually dissociates himself. He sees the threefold evolutionary process and by means of the development of the inner vision sees within the heart of the system, macrocosmic and microcosmic, the one self in many forms and finally identifies himself with that one self by the conscious rejection of the not-self after its complete subjugation and utilization. D. Tasting. He tastes then, finally, and discriminates, for taste is the great sense that begins to hold sway during the discriminating process that takes place when the illusory nature of matter is in process of realization. Discrimination is the educatory process to which the self subjects itself in the process of developing intuition, that faculty whereby the self recognizes its own essence in and under all forms. Discrimination concerns the duality of nature, the self and the not-self, and is the means of their differentiation in the process of abstraction. The intuition concerns unity and is the capacity of the self to contact other selves, and is not a faculty whereby the not-self is contacted. Hence its rarity these days owing to the intense individualization of the ego and its identification with the form, a necessary identification at this particular time. As the sense of taste on the higher planes is developed, it leads one to ever finer distinctions till one is finally led through the form right to the heart of one's nature. E. Smelling is the faculty of keen perception that eventually brings a man back to the source from whence he came, the archetypal plane, the plane where his true home is to be found. A perception of difference has been cultivated that has caused a divine discontent within the heart of the pilgrim in the far country. The prodigal son draws comparisons. He has developed the other four senses, and he utilizes them. Page 202. Now comes, in the faculty of vibratory recognition, of the home vibration, if it might be so expressed. It is the spiritual counterpart of that sense which, in the animal, the pigeon, and other birds, leads them back unerringly to the familiar spot from whence they originally came. It is the apprehension of the vibration of the self and a swift return, by means of that instinct, to the originating source. The consideration of this subject awakens the realization of the vastness of the region of thought concerned, the region of the whole evolutionary development of the human being. Yet all that is possible here, as elsewhere, is to indicate lines of thought for careful pondering and to emphasize certain ideas which may serve as the foundation thoughts for the future mental activity of the immediate generation. The following facts must also be borne in mind when considering the matter. A. That the senses have been dealt with in this division of our treatise on cosmic fire because they concern the material form. Strictly speaking, the five senses, as we know them, are the means of contact built up by the thinker, polarized in his etheric body, and find their expression in the physical form in those nerve centers, brain cells, ganglia, and plexus, which exoteric science recognizes. B. That these senses, for all purposes of present manifestation, have their focal point on the astral plane and are therefore largely under the stimulating action of the solar plexus, that great focal point in the center of the body which is the stimulating agent for most of the human family at this time. C. That as the higher triangle comes into play and the polarization steps up to the higher centers, the senses begin to make themselves felt on the mental level, and man becomes aware on that plane. Page 203. We have in the human body an interesting reflection of the transference of the polarization from the personality to the ego, or into the causal body, in the division that exists between the higher and the lower mental planes, and the dividing line of the diaphragm between the higher and the lower portions of the body. Below the diaphragm, we have the four lower centers, one, the solar plexus, 2. The spleen, 3. Organs of generation, 4. Base of the spine. Above are the three higher, 1. Heart, 2. Throat, 3. Head. In the microcosm, we have the lower quaternary separated from the triad in a similar manner, and this analogy will bear pondering upon. By careful thought, we can therefore work out the reflex action of the centers and the senses from the standpoint of the different planes, remembering that as the centers are awakened, the process will be threefold. First, the awakening on the physical plane and the gradually increasing activity of the centers until the probationary path is reached, This is paralleled by the increasing use of the senses and their constant utilization for the identification of the self and its sheaths. Second, the awakening on the astral plane and the gradually increasing activity of the centers until the first initiation is reached. This is paralleled by the tremendously keen use of the senses for the purposes of discriminating between the self and the not-self. Page 204. Third, the awakening upon the mental plane and the gradually increasing activity of the centers and the senses. The effect in both cases tends to identification of the self with its own essence in all groups and the rejection of the sheaths and the forms. This development is paralleled on the two higher planes simultaneously as in the lower, and as the astral senses come into perfected activity, the corresponding centers of force on the buddhic plane begin to function until the vibratory interplay between the two is consummated, and the force of the triad can be felt definitely in the personality via the astral. Again, the corresponding vortices on the atmic level come into active vibration as the mental centers become fourth dimensional, till we have a wonderful fiery activity demonstrating on all the three planes. From the point of view of fire, leaving the aura and its colors out of temporary consideration, the evolutionary development marks an equally definite process. Footnote. The fire of the manifested cosmos is septenary. The threefold God manifests through the seven fires. 1. Electric fire, the seven heavenly men. 2. Solar fire, evolution of the seven entities through their vehicles developing the seven principles. 3. Fire by friction, the seven chains. They are the seven centers of the logos. A heavenly man manifests through a chain. 1. He is electric fire, the seven solar entities who inform each globe. 2. He is solar fire, evolution of the life through the forms, developing the seven principles. 3. He is fire by friction, the seven globes. Each heavenly man has seven principles. A man, the microcosm, manifests through his vehicles. 1. He is electric fire, the monad a solar entity. 2. He is solar fire, evolution of the life through the vehicles in order to develop the seven principles. 3. He is fire by friction, the seven sheaths. 1. Atmic. 2. Buddhic. 3. Causal. 4. Mental body. 5. Astral body. 6. Etheric body. 7. Physical body. Physical plane man manifests in the three worlds. 1. Electric fire, the higher self. 2. Solar fire, the seven centers. 3. Fire by friction, the sheaths. Return to text. Page 205. A. The vivification of the inner heat of the sheaths, or the tiny point of fire latent in every individual atom of matter. This process proceeds in all three bodies, at first slowly, then more rapidly, and finally, simultaneously and synthetically. B. The bringing into activity from latency of the seven centers on all planes, beginning from the bottom upwards, until the centers, according to ray and type, are interrelated and coordinated. There are manifest 35 vortices of fire in the perfected adept, all of radiant activity and all interacting. C. The vortices, or wheels of lambent flame, become interlinked by triangles of fire which pass and circulate from one to another, till we have a web of fiery lines uniting centers of living fire and giving truth to the statement that the sons of mind are flames. D. These centers reach this condition of perfection as the spirit or will aspect takes ever fuller control. The unifying triangles are produced by the action of the fire of mind, while the fire of matter holds the form together in ordered sequence. So the interdependence of matter, mind, and spirit can be seen and demonstrates to the eye of the clairvoyant as the coordination of the three fires. E. In the heavenly man and his body, a chain of globes likewise can be seen, and we need here to remember very carefully that the seven chains of a scheme are the expression of a planetary logos. Footnote. The planetary chains. The seven heavenly men. Form. The sun and the seven sacred planets. From Secret Doctrine, Volume 1. some of their names and qualities. A. The seven planetary logoi, or the seven spirits before the throne. B. The seven kumaras. C. Seven solar deities. D. The primordial seven. E. The seven builders. F. Seven intellectual breaths. G. The seven manus. H. The flames. They came from previous kalpas. Their nature is knowledge and love. From the Secret Doctrine, Volumes 1 and 2. The seven sacred planets are 1. Saturn, 2. Jupiter, 3. Mars, 4. Sun, substitute for another, 5. Venus, 6. Mercury, 7. Moon, substitute for another. Neptune and Uranus are not here enumerated, nor Vulcan. The orbit of Neptune includes apparently the entire Rinkas knot. Vulcan is within the orbit of Mercury. Each one of the heavenly men manifests through a chain of seven globes. All the seven logoi influence a chain, but one of them is the incarnating entity. They influence A. some globe in chain, B. some plane, C. some round, D. some world period, E. some root race, F. some subrace, G. some branch race, H. some group, I. some human unit. Return to text. Page 206. The heavenly men are expressing themselves through a scheme of seven chains, and the emphasis has been laid unduly, perhaps, upon the dense physical planet in any particular chain. This has caused the fact of the chain importance to be somewhat overlooked. Each of the seven chains might be looked upon as picturing the seven centers of one of the heavenly men. The idea of groups of egos forming centers in the heavenly men is nevertheless correct, but in this connection the reference is to the centers of force on Buddhic and monadic levels. Page 207. In connection with this, there is a fundamental point that must never be forgotten. These seven heavenly men might be considered as being in physical incarnation through the medium of a physical planet, and herein lies the mystery of planetary evolution. Herein lies the mystery of our planet, the most mysterious of all the planets. Just as the karma of individuals differs, so differs the karma of the various logoi, and the karma of our planetary logos has been a heavy one and veiled in the mystery of personality at this time. Again, according as the centers are active or inactive, so the manifestation differs likewise, and the study which opens up is of vast and abstruse interest in connection with the solar system. 5. The centers and initiation. We have dealt briefly with the evolution of the centers, with their function, their organization, and their gradually increasing activity from a point of comparative inertia until they are consummated motion. Then they become living wheels of flame, distinguished by a dual motion of the periphery and the inner revolving wheels, and by a fourth dimensional effect due primarily to the alignment of the inner subtler vortices with the comparatively exoteric etheric centers. This alignment is brought about eventually at initiation. At the time that initiation is taken, the centers are all active, and the lower four, which correspond to the personality, are beginning the process of translating the fire into the three higher. The dual revolution in the lower centers is clearly to be seen, and the three higher are commencing to be similarly active. By the application of the rod of initiation at the time of the initiation ceremony, certain results are achieved in connection with the centers, which might be enumerated as follows. A. The fire at the base of the spine is definitely directed to whichever center is the object of special attention. This varies according to the ray or the specialized work of the initiate. Page 208. B. The center has its activity intensified, its rate of evolution increased, and certain of the central spokes of the wheel brought into more active radiance. These spokes, which are also called by some students lotus petals, have a close connection with the different spirillae in the permanent atoms. Through their stimulation, there comes into play one or more of the corresponding spirillae in the permanent atoms on the three lower planes. After the third initiation, a corresponding stimulation takes place in the permanent atoms of the triad, leading to the coordination of the Buddhic vehicle and the transference of the lower polarization into the higher. C. By the application of the rod of initiation, the downflow of force from the ego to the personality is tripled, the direction of that force being dependent upon whether the centers receiving attention are the etheric or the astral at the first and second initiations, or whether the initiate is standing before the Lord of the world. In the latter case, his mental centers or their corresponding force vortices on higher levels will receive stimulation. When the world teacher initiates at the first and second initiations, the direction of the triadal force is turned to the vivification of the heart and throat centers, and the ability to synthesize the force of the lower centers is greatly increased. When the one initiator applies the rod of his power, the downflow is from the monad, and though the throat and heart intensify vibration as a response, the main direction of the force is to the seven head centers, and finally, at liberation, to the radiant head center above, and synthesizing the lesser seven head centers. D. The centers at initiation receive a fresh access of vibratory capacity and of power, and this results in the exoteric life as, first, a sensitiveness and refinement of the vehicles, which may result at first in much suffering to the initiate, but which produces a capacity to respond to contacts that far outweighs the incidental pain. Page 209. Second, a development of psychic faculty that again may lead to temporary distress, but which eventually causes a recognition of the one self in all selves, which is the goal of endeavor. Third, a burning away through a gradual arousing of kundalini and its correct geometrical progression through the etheric web. This produces a resultant continuity of consciousness which enables the initiate consciously to utilize time as a factor in the plans of evolution. Fourth, a gradual grasp of the law of vibration as an aspect of the basic law of building. The initiate learns consciously to build, to manipulate thought matter for the perfecting of the plans of the Logos, to work in mental essence, and to apply the law on mental levels and thereby affect the physical plane. Motion originates cosmically on cosmic mental levels, and in the microcosm the same order will be seen. There is an occult hint here that will reveal much if pondered upon. At initiation, at the moment of the application of the rod, the initiate consciously realizes the meaning of the law of attraction in form building and in the synthesis of the three fires. Upon his ability to retain that realization and himself to apply the law will depend his power and progress. E. By the application of the rod, the fire of kundalini is aroused and its upward progress directed. The fire at the base of the spine and the fire of mind are directed along certain routes or triangles by the action of the rod as it moves in a specified manner. Page 210. There is a definite occult reason, under the laws of electricity, behind the known fact that every initiate presented to the initiator is accompanied by two of the masters who stand one on either side of him. The three of them together form a triangle which makes the work possible. The force of the rod is twofold and its power terrific. Apart and alone, the initiate could not receive the voltage from the rod without serious hurt, but in triangular formation, transmission comes safely. The two masters who thus sponsor the initiate represent two polarities of the electric all. Part of their work is therefore to stand with all applicants for initiation when they come before the great Lord. End of side 1, cassette number 5, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 210. Continued on side 2.